Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
An Odyssey Sports Station. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Second and 10, Bears from their 47. Williams and Swift in the backfield. Extra instructions for the line. Two receivers to each side on second and 10 from the Chicago 47. We had movement from a Bear. Williams gets the snap. And here comes a sack by Danielle Hunter.
I mean, gobbled him up just like Will Anderson Jr.
Victory formation. Stroud takes the snap, takes the knee, and it is over. The Texans have knocked off the Chicago Bears 19-13 to run their record to 2-0 and build a two-game lead in the division with a matchup with 2-0 Minnesota on the road next week.
There it is. Mark Vandermeer on the call, Andre Ware on the call, and that was what wrapped up the game last night, man. A game that was awfully tense throughout. The crowd was into it. It was great to have primetime football back at NRG Stadium. Great to do it victoriously. 19-13, the final score last night. The Texans beat the Bears. That was Danielle Hunter, you heard, getting the sack that really, I won't say salted the game away, but that really kind of took the heat off of the Texans.
That's when I'm miming it. Sean's a little confused. He paused because I was doing the...
You're huntering.
That was the one where it looked like Danielle Hunter was going to engulf Caleb Williams.
He looked like a missile.
A missile or a flying squirrel?
Yeah.
Yeah, a combination.
Right.
He was a missile squirrel.
He was a missile squirrel.
That's his nickname from now on. Most fearsome of all nicknames, the missile squirrel.
I'll let you tell him that because we had him on the post-game show. That dude was still practically in uniform.
Oh, really?
He was still...
Probably going to work out.
He might have been. Yeah. He still had on his undershirt from the game. He still had on like the white like leg-length spandex on. Still had eye black underneath his eyes.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And they got that's a while after the game is over when he gets to you.
He's the first one that Clint and I can remember that has come into the interview room who's not showered, looking good. Clint usually asks the guys about their drip when they come in there. Once we get done asking the football questions, Clint during the break's like, what am I supposed to ask him about? His eye black, Chief? I didn't ask him about any of that stuff. Danielle Hunter's a frightening individual.
You know what? Okay, then. So do we give a reprieve to What's-Her-Face there that said she was frightened sitting next to him?
No. I mean, yes. Yes, we give her a reprieve. Kay Adams.
Kay Adams,
yeah. We give her a reprieve.
No, because you're scared and you're a full-grown man.
Kind of.
Clint's a full-grown man.
Yeah, Clint's a full-grown man.
He's not, but he's so... Like, Danielle Hunter's such a gentle giant. And yet, the Texans pass rush... I'm glad I slept last night, Sean, and this is why. I immediately after the game, I go on KHOU, I do a live stream, and you're coming off of that game, and the second half was so maddeningly, painstakingly slow and frustrating.
Yeah.
Between the penalties, between the missed opportunities, all those things. I was actually, I had to keep reminding myself, hey Seth, they won the game.
They won.
They won the game. They just had seven sacks versus a mobile quarterback. D'Amico Ryan's blitzed more than he ever has in a Texans game.
Yeah.
And I had to keep reminding myself that. Now that I've had 3 hours of sleep, I've got a little bit of clarity. And I have to remember that, yeah, it's hard to win games in the NFL. And these last couple may have left you, I've said unsatiated.
Yeah.
I feel like, all right, man, there's just more. I can have more. I can eat more. There's more on the table, and I want to eat it all.
Yeah.
And yet... They end up being tough, gritty wins and with a really good defensive performance.
Yeah, I think that's a big takeaway, man. Like, that's when you know you have a good team, when you feel like, man, that was like a C-plus or a B-minus in terms of how it could have gone for the Texans, and they come out victorious. I mean, yeah, if Cam Akers punches that ball in the fourth quarter.
Ah!
But but the fact of the matter is he punches that in. We're probably talking about a 26-10 or 26-13. You know, well, probably not 26-13. They wouldn't have kicked a field. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're probably talking about a much more comfortable win. That's how this team's been doing it for a year and a half. I'd like for that to change. But the fact is they're 2-0. And the rest of the division is 0-2, and this is a great day to be a Texan fan, man. The nation, this is what I thought. My biggest takeaway from all this, even amidst, you know, penalties, the turnover there by Cam, there was a lot of good, obviously. Nico Collins is making a statement to the nation what he is. Kyhyme Fairbairn might be the MVP of this team so far. C.J. Stroud is just steady as she goes, man. Like, and so there's a ton to get really, really excited about. My biggest takeaway from this game is I think the nation tuned into that game last night to see the fireworks of C.J. Stroud with Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins and Tank Dell. This is the first taste that most of the country is getting of that combination. Joe Mixon coming off of the buck 60 last week. And what they got was, this is what Swarm is. That's what they got. They tuned in for the offensive fireworks, and what they got was Caleb Williams in a body cast at the end of the game.
Man, I tweeted this out last night, and it really wasn't even a slight, but it's true. He has some of the most electrically, athletically entertaining sacks and interceptions I've ever seen.
I thank
you for
that.
Nobody scrambles his way into making a stupid throw better than... That part's shade. Better than Caleb Williams. But even the sacks, that's what was so impressive to me about the pass rush, was that there were times where, man... It was terrifying because he was eluding all his pressure, and it's on a blitz, so you know there's not as many guys to stop him once he gets past the line of scrimmage, and yet they were able to bring him down. Forcing the bad throws out of a rookie quarterback, all of that was really cool. And then, honestly, I think the biggest telling thing about the strategy that DeMeco employed, which I was wrong about, it's a rookie, you know, like just play it vanilla, see what he can do. They went after him, and it was an incredibly effective strategy. But because the defense, you know, when you blitz, there's a risk on the back end. And they were good in coverage on the back end. The one thing, and I don't think they talked about this on the broadcast, but we noticed early on, wait a second. Why is Stingley lined up on the right side? Okay, mm-hmm. He's tracking, he's following DJ Moore.
Yeah.
So early on, Lassiter was on the left side for the first time all training camp or in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, I thought he looked a little slow to attack. I thought he looked a little bit hesitant almost. Mm-hmm. So I was nervous about that early on, but he came along strong. I mean, it didn't take him long to adjust.
Yeah, I mean, the ball skills of these cornerbacks last night was on display big time. Here was DeMeco Ryans talking about exactly what Seth's talking about on bringing pressure on Caleb Williams.
Well, it starts up front with our defensive line, like Will, Daniil, Mario, all the guys, the way they were rushing. Like together, and the way we were covering in the back end, that really set things apart for us. So, you know, credit to Sting and Kamari for the way they cover, allowing those guys to get the pressure. You don't get pressure unless the coverage is tight. So those guys cover well and allow the rush to get there.
That's true. I mean, you got corners that cover like that. There's a lot that you can do defensively. Some of the numbers of this game last night. The Bears, just to contextualize it, because I thought the Texans played a really good defensive game against the Colts, other than the three huge chunk plays. And I know that the chunk plays count, but I think last night was indicative of kind of, okay, those chunk plays are outliers. The teams, even good teams, aren't going to go for 55 yards on three different plays against you in a game. The Bears gained 3.1 yards per play in that game last night. And for those who aren't familiar, or you need some contextualization for that stat, the Carolina Panthers were the worst team in the NFL last year in terms of yards per play, 4.1 yards per play. So the Bears last night were a full yard worse than a normal Carolina Panthers game last year.
And for a good chunk of the game, they were at 2.5 yards per play.
Yeah.
Until
you were texting me during the game.
I knew you'd get excited about the game.
I love YPP,
baby.
I love my YPP.
You know, the other one, though, too, not to get too numbers heavy, but this is an easy one. Yeah. The Bears averaged 3.2 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
So on the season, I'm guessing the Texans are holding the opponent to about 3.1 yards per carry.
Yeah.
It was 3.0 last week.
Yeah.
That's really, really good. Yep. In any given game, if you can hold them to less than 3.4, you're doing a good job. So it's early. You know, I don't start looking at defensive and offensive rankings until there's a few games in the books. But this is definitely a different defense than last year. And then because of the lack of allowed big plays by the Texans defense, especially when blitzing, where usually you're going to give up something here or there.
Yeah.
I felt very good about that.
That was a game last night. Like the games like that last year where the offense just was, you know, kind of, you know, stuck at times. There were penalties, things like that. The Texans, I think last year the Texans might lose a game like that last night. They win a game like that. Probably should have won by more.
And playing sloppier than I think they're happy with. Now, I know from last night, just on social media and my live stream, people were concerned about the Texans not pushing the ball downfield. Look, for one, that is a very good defense.
That's a good defense.
That is a very good defense.
Yes.
But two, the pass protection had some issues. And there were times, just going back and watching the All-22 real quick this morning, there was at least one where Nico Collins was open for a touchdown. Yeah. And the pressure just, it got there just, I mean, an eighth of a second less. And I think CJ could have hit him downfield.
Yep.
And then the really weird one, too, was it wasn't a deep shot, but it could have been a touchdown. Tank Dell just
hit him in the hands,
dropping that. Yeah. But it was weird because he like adjusted his hands at the last moment, almost like I blamed that there was like an incoming Southwest flight that was landing at Hobby
the roof
or
was
something.
Open.
Yeah, I blame
the lights got in his
I blame
eyes.
The Earth and aircraft and possibly a blinking satellite or something.
I
yeah.
do too, because Tank usually comes down with that ball.
Maybe Tank didn't realize the roof was open until that moment. And he's like, oh, he got distracted by the background.
I loved the look of the stadium with the roof open at night.
Yeah.
The way the field was lit and the crowd seemed dimmer than normal. You know, like it just. It had
well,
a
there
cool,
are Bears fans there.
It had a cool feel. I don't mean like intelligent, but that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I thought the stadium, I thought, you know, all the wristbands they had that were lighting up throughout the game and stuff. Man, I thought that was a cool vibe last night in the stadium,
I must have been focused in because honestly, usually I'm the one who gets distracted by that stuff.
Yeah.
Didn't notice any of it.
Really?
Yeah. I just,
it didn't distract me from the game. I just thought it looked really cool. And at halftime, it looked amazing during the halftime.
Somebody had told me that, somebody DM'd me and said that the stadium looked empty at the beginning of the game. And I'm looking out and I'm like, no, it was, I mean, sometimes people get fooled by the white when everybody's got a color day.
Yeah.
They see all the big blanks of white and they assume that those must be empty seats
or something. No,
and it was, dude, and kudos to the crowd. How many false starts did the Bears have?
Good question.
False starts and or delay of game or timeouts taken
because they
weren't functioning properly.
Yep.
That was really good. Eberflus, you brilliant moron. What were those challenges?
Those are awful.
I thought Virginia McCaskey was the one in charge of the challenges. 101-year-old Virginia McCaskey was like, call the coach. That's wrong.
What were the two? The
Stephon
one?
Diggs.
Oh, on the 21-yard catch. Oh, and then the would-be interception.
Yeah, the would-be interception, which was clearly not
an
interception.
If he's a receiver, we're not even talking about this. I think because it was a defense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was, if it was like a reception, like he didn't survive to the ground.
Right.
It was weird.
That was the one thing. There was a little bit of sloppiness there where CJ got away with one there.
Yeah.
You know, and that Bears defense, they're so good. The best indication, and it wasn't even that bad of a play, but when you watch Jalen Johnson break up the pass on Joe Mixon over the middle, you're like, why is Jalen Johnson on Joe Mixon? Because of that.
Yeah.
Because they do a really good job of disguising and lurking and doing all these things that just make a quarterback like CJ, who doesn't want to throw interceptions. He's very good at not throwing interceptions. It's a little bit of hesitancy that gums things up. It's a well-run defense. That's why Eberflus is going to be a good defensive coordinator somewhere
bingo,
next year.
You nailed it. Yeah. He'll be a hell of a DC next year. All right, we're off and running, man. A victorious Monday here. A victorious reaction Monday. It's a victory Monday, by God. We haven't even talked about Nico Collins yet. We got to get into Nico.
I know.
Nico is a beast. And but I think with Nico's heavy workload comes a question I think a lot of Texan fans are concerned about 2 games in. We're going to get to that coming up next.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Strat in the gun on 2nd and 24. Here's the snap. CJ looking. CJ firing downfield. Hits Nico. 10, 5 to the end zone. Touchdown, Houston. A flag on the play.
Now that's weight room right there, baby.
Oh. Yeah, that was weight room right there. If you watched Nico Collins, they mic'd him up for the Colts game. And one of the several plays he made in that game after he got tackled or knocked out of bounds, he got up in the face of one of the Colts DBs and said, "That's weight room, baby. That's weight room."
Right, yeah.
That's what Dre's referring to there.
You know what's really cool is I know a lot of people said, "Hey, why aren't the tight ends more involved, or weren't they last night?" You know who was the deep route on those that double post crosser there that opened things up for Nico Collins?
Schultz?
Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that? And he timed it perfectly. Dalton Schultz turned into a blocker immediately after the catch.
Yeah.
You know, there was no threat of offensive pass interference or anything. And as Dalton Schultz was involved in the passing game, the Texans, to their credit, just did some things versus that very good Bears defense of finding windows and opportunities.
Yeah.
They did it in the second half, too. It's just that the pass protection broke down at very bad times, or some of the penalties and mistakes also came in crucial situations.
Yep.
So, upon reflection, as it always is, it's weird to say, it's never bad as you thought it was when you watch the film. I'm saying that after a win.
Right.
I'm like, it wasn't as bad as that. There were opportunities in the second half where I don't feel as frustrated about their inability to really put the Bears away, but there is definitely a lot of meat on the bone when it comes to just streamlining this operation.
No doubt. We'll get to all the stock up, stock down at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. We will acknowledge at 7:20, a lot of acknowledging going on from over the weekend. Crazy weekend around the NFL, too. That was as wild a Sunday as we've seen in a long, long time. I'm kind of glad that this is one of the handful of Sundays that you and I got to watch football during the day as opposed to being, you know, dialed in on the Texans all day. That was a crazy early window of games. I want to keep it focused on Nico here for a second. Nico Collins, that touchdown that you heard right there, the only touchdown of the game for the Houston Texans. I love that that came on a 2nd and 24, I guess Mark said it was, after a 15-yard penalty that was assessed against Nico Collins. That was after the very last play of the first quarter. Tyreek Stevenson gets up. I don't think the ref saw this, but put his finger inside Nico's helmet. I think if they'd seen that.
He tried to pull a Moe and Curley on him.
Yeah, he might. Yeah, right, exactly. And then the referee saw the retaliation from Nico, calls the 15-yard penalty. So then you start the second quarter in 2nd and 24, and I love that it was a slant route, classic Nico slant route, and then he just, I don't know who the DB was in the end zone that he just threw off of him like he was just so much garbage.
I think that was,
it was one of the safeties trying to tackle him at the goal line. But Nico's a beast. This is probably the highest compliment I can pay to Nico, is that Nick Caserio had one of the best off seasons that we've seen a general manager have here in this town, certainly ever. He signed Danielle Hunter. He traded for Stephon Diggs. He traded for Joe Mixon. Others, Azeez Al-Shaair, like he had a really good offseason. The best move so far of the entire offseason for the Texans, two games into the season, is Nico Collins' contract extension.
If he continues to play like this,
cheap,
it is a very, very good deal. And I think that I would be flabbergasted, or I would be astounded if Nico continues to play like this. It's going to be one of these situations where all of a sudden you hear about a couple years from now, you hear that they extended Nico's contract, like without ever a peep out of anything.
Like Tunsil.
Tunsil, which, yeah. I mean,
contractually,
Nico embodies everything D'Amico would want in a football player.
Yeah, I agree.
They gave Laremy Tunsil an extension without him like clamoring for it or anything. So, yeah, they damn well will give Nico one, but I don't think it's ever going to be an issue.
No.
One of the things I love about Houston over the course of the last 6 months is that Swarm has become both an adjective, a noun, and and
yeah,
a verb.
And a verb.
But he's one of the swarmest Texans. Nico is very much up there.
Gets.
He might be in the top three of swarms on the Texans team right
now. He's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good. And two games in, he's got 14 catches for a little over 250 yards. I loved seeing him get into the end zone last night. Only touchdown in the game for the Texans. But it's like there's nothing cookie cutter about his 6, 7, 8 catches that he gets, man. There are at least 3 or 4 every game where you're going, all right, there's like 10 guys on earth that can do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like just the 11 last week, the 55-yard jump ball between two defenders. I think even the touchdown that you heard there, like just Nico Collins with a head of steam is like it's, man, he is, I don't want to say he's been a revelation. He was amazing last year, but my God, he's taken last year and he's taken it to another level two games.
Well, I think the biggest thing with Nico, especially, because now it's becoming routine on the scramble drill. The scramble drill is becoming routine. Twice last night, and especially the early one, from our vantage point in the press box, it looked like there was no way in hell that CJ wasn't going to get sacked because the D lineman chasing him was moving.
Yeah.
And they make it look on this scramble drill almost like no big deal.
Yeah.
CJ just fires it off to Nico. The ball's a little bit high. Nico just pulls it in and it looks like no big deal.
Yep.
And yet it's almost becoming routine. Same thing on this wasn't scramble drill per se. But it was on a scramble. When CJ threw that ball to Tank, the Tank dropped. I mean, that was across his body.
Yeah.
And it was the point where at that point, I think I was watching on television, and Collinsworth remarked about what a crazy throw it was by CJ to be able to throw across his body, and I'm like,
right.
I mean, that's just what he.
That's, I know they haven't been on national TV very much.
That wasn't way across his body. Like, okay, all right.
Yeah, man. I want to go back. I haven't gotten to watch any of the TV copy yet, but the two throws that I can't wait to go back and watch and see what Tirico and Collinsworth said was the one you just talked about, the first Nico scramble drill where CJ in real time looked like he was getting dragged to the ground as he threw an absolute missile to Nico along the sidelines. Like that was crazy. And then I think it was a third down throw. I'm almost certain it was the one chunk play that Stephon Diggs had in the game. Where CJ just, I mean, those are the ones he makes look so easy.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that he just drops it in there. Like that 21-yard catch by Diggs, those are the two I want to go back and see. Because we have not gotten a lot of the national media. Certainly, we haven't gotten that Sunday night football type attention. So that's kind of fun, you know, like when you've got an announced crew. I've seen all the CJ Stroud highlights and they watched the playoff game last year and stuff like that. But I'm anxious to go back and see Tirico and Collinsworth. I'm assuming marvel at things that, to your point, you and I have probably, and many others have come to take for granted that C.J. Stroud just has a cape on all the time.
Yeah, yeah. And the other guy, too, that I could see in a two-hour show we might neglect to mention, except I'm sure you've got him and acknowledge me, Kymie Fairbairn.
He's in there.
I mean, my God. I mean, to the point where, okay, Laremy Tunsil, critical situation, false start, big surprise, right? No, that's what he does.
Right.
59-yard field goal.
Yeah.
That's what Kymie Fairbairn does.
That's crazy.
Oh, my God. That's what they were gushing about on the broadcast a lot was just Kymie Fairbairn and how incredibly clutch and automatic he's been. Boy, in an outdoor stadium last night, too.
It was an outdoor swirling winds. Call, Seth.
Yes. The swirling winds.
That was an outdoor game last night. That's true.
Yeah.
Kymie Fairbairn, if you missed the graphic on TV, no kicker in the history of the league. Not in the first two games of the season, over any two-game period ever, has kicked 5 50-plus-yard field goals. Kymie's got 6. And the one of the 7 field goals he's made that wasn't a 50-yarder was a 47-yarder. So the dude hasn't kicked a short one, a chippy, yet this year, which I guess is kind of good news, at least. It means that they get in the red zone, that they're normally scoring touchdowns or fumbling on the 5-yard line. The question, okay, so we've dialed in on Nico being a beast in this segment, and he absolutely is. So the question I saw from a lot of people on the post game last night, on the text page this morning, is, okay, where are all the others here? I mean, we've been very Nico heavy in the offense. This was supposed to be a fireworks display where everybody was going to be getting, you know, some games, some games guys were going to get their 100 while other guys are getting 50 or 60. The Colts game, I think everybody got the requisite amount of touches, or at least the quality of the touches in the case of Diggs, were really good. He only had 30-something yards, but he had two touchdowns. Tank had a couple running plays, a couple chunk plays in the pass game. Nico was a beast. Last night was a little bit more like, okay, well, it's, you know, it's a lot of Nico here, but Diggs was pretty quiet other than that one big play. Tank was one catch for minus 3 yards, and they tried him on those end-arounds, couldn't do anything. Here's D'Amico after the game, was asked about, okay, how do we get Tank and Diggs going?
Yeah, I don't think it's a matter of getting guys going. If, like I said before, guys, whoever is open and they're making plays, they'll get the ball, right? So it's not a lack of trying to get those guys the ball. Nico has just shown up these first 2 weeks and made some big-time plays for us. So the other guys are playing really well as well. I mean, Tank and Diggs are playing well, too.
So they as long as they're winning, I think most people don't care super deep about how the ball is distributed as long as the Texans keep winning football games. I think lurking in the back of everybody's mind is, you know, is six catches for 30 or 40 yards with Diggs, is that a recipe for the, you know, the possible ticking time bomb to be detonated?
Yeah, I didn't even want to say it necessarily. I was wondering as you were talking about that whether I should even mention that. I would be highly surprised.
Me too.
It just, at this point in the season, certainly.
Yes.
I think that there is a potential for this offense to be very explosive, and we just haven't seen it yet. I think that there is very much an element to, as we saw around the league yesterday, I think most offenses are rusty. A lot of the best performers aren't necessarily right where they're going to be. So I'm gonna try to be patient on that. It helps when the defense is playing the way they are.
Yes.
It helps when Kyme Fairbairn is as clutch as he is. So all of that helps it and makes it a lot easier to withstand the storm. But once the new offensive coordinator took over in Buffalo last year and things started to go south for Stephon Diggs, they were winning a lot of games when they went to the AFC Championship game.
Did.
Like it was not like there was a lack of team success.
No.
The offense was actually doing pretty well, better in a lot of respects than it had been before the new guy came in. So it's something to maybe keep off in the distance, just to be aware of on the horizon.
It's funny you bring that up, the defense and Kyme, but the defense in particular. Like, if I'm one of the other contenders in the AFC and I'm tuning into that game last night and coming into the season, the thought with the Texans was, yeah, they're in the mix in the AFC, largely because of the offense, largely because C.J. Stroud is awesome. He's wise beyond his years. He's super talented, and they went and got him more weapons. If I'm a player or a coach or a front office guy from one of these other AFC teams, you know, the Chiefs or the Ravens or the Bills or the Bengals or whoever, you know, the Jets won yesterday. People think the Jets can be whatever. I'm watching that game last night going, oh, crap. You know, because the Bears did kind of corral the Texans. I know CJ still had 260 yards passing, but it was very Nico heavy. They managed to shut down Tank and Diggs. The running game got shut down. They only scored 19 points. If I'm one of those other teams, I'm watching it, and I'm watching that Texans defense, and I'm like, oh, crap. They've got another side of the ball now.
Yeah, and you know, somebody else said to me last night, like, well, you see, everybody shouldn't be talking Super Bowl with this team. Well, for one, okay, show me the NFL team that's won a Super Bowl that didn't, it sometimes struggle to look like the greatest show on turf at any, like the Kansas City Chiefs last year. I'm not thinking about November right now.
No.
I'm thinking about the Minnesota Vikings, but there's nothing so far that this team has done that shows me like, oh no, they're not actually going to be able to compete with the heavyweights. I feel much more, because of the way the defense has played.
Yeah.
I feel, and the fact that they got rid of a lot of their issues with the deep ball from last week, the fact that they were able to blitz so heavily and be effective with it, I feel better right now than I did maybe 3 weeks ago about the team in total.
The issues that have led to them being a 2-0 where we feel like they've left stuff on the table are things that are either unsustainable for the opposition or incredibly fixable.
If you look at, you know,
I feel more strongly that they're a team that can contend.
I hate it when people use box score victories, like in a loss, especially when you say, well, look, we ran for this and we had this. If you just look at some of the basic stats and then yards per play, the Texans in the last two games, on a down-by-down basis, have physically dominated and destroyed the opponent. They really, really have.
Yeah.
Like, it's been kind of glaring. That's why it's frustrating, because they can't put the cherry on top.
Right.
That's the frustrating part. But also, the defense could be something special. The fact that Kamari Lassiter is coming along as well as he is, the fact that they asked him to play on the left side of the field yesterday after being on the right side all throughout training camp and last week, I think that's a very good sign for how versatile the defense could be moving forward.
No doubt. All right, let's get to headlines. We'll stick with the Texans. We have not even talked about the Astros yet. They swept the Angels over the weekend. We'll talk about the big storylines to come out of that, and a crazy day around the NFL as well yesterday. We'll get to all of that in headlines coming up.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
34 seconds to go. It's 4th-and-17. Chicago with the ball. Texans up 6. And here we are again in a pressure situation. The H-Town Heartstoppers are at it again. Can they get off the field here on 4th-and-17 for the Bears from the Chicago 40? Williams shotgun. Here's the snap. Here's the rush. Williams with time. Guns it. Downfield right side. Incomplete. And the Texans take over on downs. They'll win on Sunday Night Football.
All right, there you go. 19-13. Mark Vandermeer on the call, of course. The final score. And the Texans in yet another game that comes down to the final 30 seconds. This is what they do. D'Amico Ryans now 9-3 in one-score games. And the Texans beat the Bears last night 19-13. D'Amico Ryans asked after the game, how much can a game like this, where the Texans made a lot of mistakes but still came out victorious, how much can this help you moving forward?
It's just about winning, right? One week at a time is, and they're not always going to be pretty, but you just have to find a way to win. And that's what I'm most proud about with our guys. Like, no matter what happened near the end, we found a way to win. With all the penalties, all of the negative plays, like, we were able to gut out a win, and that's what this league is about.
They're a really interesting team because the majority of the, literally two-thirds of the games that D'Amico Ryans has been a head coach in.
Yeah.
You could say that in a lot of these one-score games, you could say, like, man, if this or if that, we're probably not even. And I think the last night's game was like that. We're like, man, if Cam Akers doesn't fumble the football in the fourth quarter, we're probably talking about a two-touchdown victory. And yet this very same team that can't seem to put their foot on the throat is awesome in the last 3 and 4 minutes of game situationally.
And I think even yesterday in the second half where, you know, I said earlier, last night immediately after the game when I was talking about it and thinking about it, I was still very much burned in thinking about the fact that in the second half, here are the drives real quick. Punt.
Who are these for?
Texans drives.
Texans drives, yeah.
Punt. 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 Field goal.
Yeah.
Punt. Fumble. Yeah. Punt. And then end of game. So they closed it out with the end of the game.
Yeah.
The one good thing that really happened in the second half was that nice drive that they had. Dalton Schultz had the big catch. And then Cam Akers fumbles.
Yeah.
Fumbles within, you know, within breathing.
Inside the five.
Yeah. And after doing some nice things as a runner times, too.
Yep.
So just tying it all together in the second half, that was the frustrating part. My biggest concern right now remains pass protection. I think that last night there were, I'll credit Matt Eberflus with some of the blitzes. There was a delayed blitz on one of those sacks of CJ that,
very nice.
You know, that was a great play call and well executed by the defense. Kenyon Green had some rough snaps. Shaq Mason had one or two rough snaps. The interior offensive line, you know, Jacob Patterson in the run, there were some miscues between him and the guards. So the interior offensive line, I feel better about it in general than I did 3 weeks ago. But that's the thing right now that I'm most concerned about, upending the greatness of the offense.
Yeah,
potentially.
I think that's fair. If I told you C.J. Stroud was sacked 3 times and was hit 4 times total in the game last night.
It feels light.
Yes.
It feels less than what it is. And part of that's because CJ did a great job of handling the pressure at times.
Agreed.
I'll tell you what. I know people, There's some people out there that refuse to believe that height matters at all for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Man, there were times out there where Caleb Williams could have been served by being 3 inches taller.
Agreed.
There's stuff that CJ can do in the pocket that I don't think Caleb Williams is capable of doing because he's too short. And because he doesn't also... If he's going to be that short, if he remains this short, Sean, if he chooses to remain this short... You got to have more of an over-the-top delivery.
As if there's a surgery out there.
Well, there is. I don't think it's probably all that good for athletes.
Yeah,
but
probably not.
I started getting on my social media feed for some reason, I'm getting these ads for lifted shoes, which apparently can add like 4 inches of height to you.
Now, that would be fun. You being like this six foot nine Frankenstein.
Yeah. I don't feel like, I'm curious, like, what did I do to trigger that in the algorithm? I don't get it.
You must have been talking about Frankenstein near your phone and Siri picked it up or something.
I was probably
like
talking
that.
About like one of my tall friends or something. Maybe. About like how I feel short around him. And
Could be.
I've got a lot of those, the offensive linemen. As much as I hate and despise offensive linemen, I do have some that are dear friends.
Believe it or not. Let's get to the Astros. We'll circle back to the Texans. We'll do stock up, stock down at 7 o'clock. We're going to acknowledge. We'll do acknowledge meet around 7:20. That'll be Texans and a whole lot of stuff from the weekend. Fun weekend of sports, man, including the Astros, who sweep the Angels over the weekend. So that was good to see. Typically what's happened with the Astros over the last month or so is that they really raise their game if they're playing a team that's a playoff contender, and then they kind of fall asleep at the wheel against the lesser teams. They didn't do that against the Angels. They sweep the Angels over the weekend. The big takeaways from this weekend, they're now 8-0 in Yusei Kikuchi starts. Mm-hmm. They won on Friday 5-3. And Justin Verlander was not peak Verlander, but he was better on Saturday, enough to at least probably like rekindle some conversation about where he is in the pecking
order. You know, and I think with Verlander, it's not about the back of the baseball card per se when it comes to the trust factor. It's if you do dive into his career or if you just watch Astros baseball, but even before he got to the Astros, he's a guy that has had multiple times in his career when he's been able to work his way back out of mechanical issues or what have you. Yep. So just that start it's more promising in my eyes than it would be with other pitchers necessarily. Yep. I feel more like, all right, this is for real. He's figuring some things out.
Yeah.
I got a confession. I'm deliberately unprepared in some regards this morning. I saw that there was an article where that Chandler Rome wrote that said Kikuchi was aware of all the scrutiny of that trade.
And
I didn't want to listen, Kikuchi. Let me stereotype and just assume that all Japanese pitchers are just like Shohei Ohtani and that you don't know anything about what people are saying outside of your little cocoon.
Or doing with your bank accounts.
Can you just let me be a big 49-year-old American dude that stereotypes people? I don't want to know that you heard the criticism.
The best part of that, I saw that article. It was a good article by Chandler. The best part about that article was Kikuchi kind of pulled a Tunsil. Where, remember when Tunsil got traded for 2 firsts and a second? He's like, yeah, I would have traded me too. Kind of the same thing.
Oh, that makes me feel better.
But where Kikuchi was like mildly surprised at how many prospects the Astros gave up for him in the article. I thought that was kind of funny.
It's a nice boost to your ego.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah, hell yeah. San Diego for 3 games over the next 3 days in San Diego, including tonight at 8:40. This, I'm not going to be disingenuous to this audience. I will not be staying up to watch this game tonight. I'm working on 2 hours of sleep right now. So I will watch a cut-up replay of it for you tomorrow.
We discussed this during the break. We both realized that as middle-aged men, we can handle the 3 hours of sleep in a night as long as you didn't do anything the previous night.
Which I did not. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't diminish yourself before you go into the effort.
Saturday's big.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's a message to all you 49-year-old kids out there. Hey, lay off the alcohol every now and then, okay?
49-year-old kids.
Hey, drinking can actually affect your life, turns out.
Believe it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll get to the Wild NFL Sunday in the 7 o'clock hour as well. I think the main thing you need to know from this Wild NFL Sunday, one, ton of upsets. Two, based on the way all these teams around the NFL, there's no dominant team. I guess New Orleans is the most dominant team right now, which kind of tells you about the Super Bowl picture 2 weeks into the season. And all the other three AFC South teams are all 0-2 right now.
That's a shame.
The last time that happened since realignment in 2002, the only other time it's happened where a team started out 2-0 and the rest of the division started out 0-2, the 2007 New England Patriots.
That's exactly, you know what, I said that to somebody last night. I thought it was you. If the Texans have to become a team that's dominant in a division that sucks, Bring it on. The AFC South can be the new AFC East, baby. Bingo. Yeah, let's do it.
Bingo. Our baseball talk is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get lots of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, yes, we'll do stock up, stock down on the Texans. Plenty of both last night, for sure, in a 19-13 win over the Bears. Before we get to that, it's...
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.